Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station where we help those with ADHD pay attention to attention, with your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Topper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Copper. Our topic tonight, ADHD wears bifocals too. Got to get my own title right. And with us in our virtual studio is the, and I mean the, with a capital T-H-E, Linda Rogley, the AD Diva, who is actually spectacular. We've had her on several times before. She's always very, very insightful and inspirational, and I'm anxious to kind of get into the meat and potatoes of the show. But real quick, tonight is Wednesday, May the 24th in the year 2017 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. A few announcements. You know, we adore, we love Chad. That's the Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder organization. They are the largest non-for-profit that advocates on behalf of those with ADHD, and their conference is going to be coming up in November, the 9th to the 11th, to be specific, in Atlanta, Georgia. They've spent a couple years ago, I was on the West Coast and then New Orleans, and Atlanta, Georgia is getting pretty close to home, at least for me, living in Tampa, Florida. To learn more about the conference, go to chadd.org. I'll confess is that enormous number of the people that present on this show actually present at Chad. Great content there, great content here. But we are far inferior to Chad. You go to these conferences, and it's really all about listening to Linda Rogley do a presentation and going up to talk to Linda Rogley when it's over with. And I've seen her and Dr. Barkley and Dr. Thomas Brown and numerous others give all the time in the world to the people that are there. And the real learning is not just what's happening in the presentations and stuff, but what's happening in the hallways and lunch and the network and who you get together because you're kind of connecting with your tribe. So if you haven't gone to the conference, you should. We'd also like to thank Chad, because tonight's show is being brought to you by Chad. We've got a quick tip that we're going to run for you on behalf of Chad, and then we'll get into the show. So here we go.
Are you considering a medication holiday for your child? Possible benefits include time for a growth spurt unaffected by medication and relief from side effects. Be sure to weigh the benefits and the drawbacks, because ADHD symptoms will return. And always discuss any changes with your child's health care provider first. For more information, visit the CHAD website, helpforadhd.org, H-E-L-P, the number 4, ADHD.org.
All right. Thanks again, Chad, for everything that you do on behalf of everybody in the ADHD community. If you're not a member, by the way, you should go sign up. They have a lot of great benefits, the magazine, Ask the Expert, lots of blogs. But the real reason to join is because they advocate on behalf of you. They go to Capitol Hill. They talk. They deal with all the regulatory agencies. So we speak with one voice. So please check them out. All right, so let's get into the meat of the show. Again, tonight, as I said, we have V. Linda Rogley. She's a professional certified coach and award-winning author. She's the founder of the AD Diva Network for ADHD women 40 and better. She's an expert in life after ADHD for men and women. And I want to stress that I actually get caught in this trap sometimes about thinking that she's an expert on women, but she's really not. I'm in awe of her. She's a great writer, but she's also really good into the detail and the research, and always is really great at taking the research and boiling it down to, in a way that I can understand. So I learned years ago, learn the people that read all the books and know all the stuff and go to them, because they can point me to the chapter that I need to read and I can shortcut it. And she's really good at articulating the research. So she's very special to me in that. In 2006, she co-founded the ADD Women's Palooza, an online conversation with the world's top ADHD women experts that attract thousands of women worldwide. I've been honored, literally honored, that I've been invited to participate in that in every year. And I'm very grateful to Linda and her partner Terry for doing that. She opens the doors to transform ADHD women through private and group coaching and women's retreats. And this is what she does really differently, is take individuals away and really kind of spend some time with us. She's really, really special. She's really special. She's a very popular speaker at almost every ADHD conference in the United States and around the globe. Learn more about her, go to addiva.net. And let me spell that, addiva.net. And Linda, welcome to the show.
I had myself on mute so that I wouldn't cough or anything. So, hi, I'm here. I'm here. Thank you. Hi there.
Hey, Linda, welcome. Oh my God, you're so polite. So we, it's funny because I've not done a show on ADHD and aging. I mean, I've touched it base with touched upon it in some other shows, but never really done something on it. And I myself, I actually coached some people that were diagnosed like with ADHD in their 70s, which kind of blows you away. And so it's fascinating. And you've done some presentations on this. So I want to begin before we get into the topic. What inspired you to really look into this part of this of the ADHD population that really often is overlooked?
Oh, Jeff, you had to ask me the question that makes me look bad from the very, very beginning. I'm so embarrassed because, you know, all of us, the truth is that we're all of us are pretty self-centered. And the truth is that I was diagnosed at later in life, if you will, over after 40. And I wanted to find out more about myself and to find out, you know, am I the only one out there like this? So that's the one question that you could have asked me that makes me look bad. I just have to tell you, because it was just selfishness, pure selfishness.
Well, you know, I have to say is it might have been pure selfishness, but look at what it's doing for everybody else by providing an education and somebody out there talking about it, because nobody really does. It's hard to find information. So while it might be selfish, and I have to say is I actually started this radio show as a selfish way for me to get out in social media and get my name out in the world. Little did I know that I would get an amazing education. And actually, we've done numerous shows with many people on things like being ADHD and gay, and I've gotten emails from people. I did it because I thought it was an interesting area, but people are like, oh my God, there's nothing out there. I totally get it. So I actually think it's a positive and a plus. So kudos to you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And you're right, actually, that there is virtually no research out there about the intersection of ADHD and aging and being a senior or being over 40. And so what researchers have had to do is kind of cobble together research from other areas and then apply them to the ADHD arena, or there's some anecdotal evidence from some people who have done some publishing and that kind of stuff. So I think that we're on the horizon. We're kind of budding into that. We're kind of blossoming into learning more about ADHD and aging. But I have to tell you that the question I get more than anything, and I hear it everywhere, not just – I don't just get it. I read it on you know, Facebook. I read it on blogs everywhere. Is does ADHD get worse as you get older? And so the answer to the question that everyone's holding their bated breath for is that, sure, it gets worse because everything gets worse. Our memory gets worse. Our processing speed gets worse. And that's true for everyone out there in the world. Everybody's, you know, you've read those silly little things like I'm having an ADD moment or I'm having a senior moment, that kind of thing. And everybody says, well, everybody has ADD sometimes. Well, no, they don't. Because when you have ADHD and you're getting older at the same as well, because we hope that we get older. Otherwise, bad alternative if we don't get older.
Yep.
It's basically like having ADHD on steroids. You have layers of this brain processing difficulty. And it really does stop people in their tracks, especially, I know we're going to touch on hormones, but especially when hormones enter the picture as well. So I kind of want to do an overview here tonight, if I might, about, you know, the question about is how do we deal with ADHD when you get older? How does it intersect the hormonal issues and the hormonal changes that we all go through as we get older, women more abruptly than men, but certainly all of us? How does that affect our memory? Because memory is a big issue with ADHD at any age, but especially as we get older. And then does that connect to the dreaded dementia or even Alzheimer's? So there's some good news out there, there's some medium news out there, and there's a teeny bit of bad news out there, what we know now. So I just want to let people know that if you have ADHD and you are over 40, 50, 60, even 70 or 80, because you're right, there are people being diagnosed that late in life, which is fabulous, then you are the leading edge here. So I would love to hear from people about their own experiences, and I'll share some of the experiences of my own and of some of my clients as well that I hear from regularly about some of the issues we deal with.
So real quickly, literally, if you're inspired and you have a story and you're really kind of connecting to this, Linda, I trust if they go to your website, there's a contact button where they can kind of type some stuff in and communicate with you. And I say that because Linda is really kind of I'm really on the forefront of some of this stuff in the coaching world to kind of pay attention to it. So we encourage you to kind of reach out to her because I know that she's great at responding and really kind of meeting them where they are. So, Linda, I want to go to a break.
And just in case you can't find it, it's linda@addiva.net. So just in case you can't find it.
Excellent. Thank you. So I want to go to break in a couple minutes, but I want to kind of get into this at least for a little bit. So you want to start with, you know, how do you deal with it? Is that a good place for us to jump in?
Let's do that at the very end. let's back up. Let's go back. Let's do that at the very end. Let's talk about, if you don't mind, is it okay if I kind of back up a little bit? I just want to talk about the number of ADHD folks out there, adults who are older adults who have ADHD issues. And what we know is that, you know, the prevalence of ADHD is about 8 or 9% from what we can gather. Statistics are very difficult to pin down, but let's just pretend that those are accurate. About half that number continue to have issues through into adulthood, so about 4.5%, according to the statistics that came out a couple of years ago. And what they say now is that about 3.3% of adults between age 44 and 85 have ADHD. But remember, too, that those statistics could be much higher simply because we don't have a lot of people who are being diagnosed or haven't in the past been diagnosed with ADHD. So the percentages actually may go up. But remember, too, that there's no adult onset ADHD. If you are diagnosed at age 76, it doesn't mean that you developed ADHD at age 75. It means that as you look back over your life, there have been very important signals about ADHD when you were a kid, when you were an adolescent, when you were a young adult, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you may have been coping so well with them during the course of your life that you were able to kind of fool yourself and fool the system, but chances are good that internally that kind of imposter syndrome, if you will, has done a lot of the heavy lifting for you, and inside you're still really having the shame which often accompanies ADHD. I know we got to take a break, so I won't go on about that, but it's really important topic.
I think what you did is really, really important. One of the things people think of it as a disease. It's not something you catch. It's really more of a condition, as I talk to all the experts that are on the forefront of the research. Something else I also kind of want to throw in there is, you know, Linda, I've been fascinated about coping mechanisms that have, and I'm actually been trying to find somebody I can interview on ADHD and smoking, because I know research is being done right now to use a nicotine patch as an alternative to stimulant medications. We know that it stimulates attention, and it's fascinating because as I've been talking to try to find someone to come on to do that, I had the hypothesis of I was speaking with or email with Dr. Barkley, is that back in the 60s, when people were smoking people were smoking as a result, was it actually a lot of adults with ADHD were more prone to it, and were they self-medicating, and thus they were addicted to the nicotine, but they were also being positively reinforced because of better performance in school and better performance on the job. And there's no research on this, by the way, but the hypothesis is as smoker sensation rates have gone down, diagnosis of ADHD has gone up. And I want to temper this. That's a working theory. It's not actual research. There's nothing done on that. But if they're using research to determine if nicotine patches can be used as an alternative, which goes back to the in this age group that's there, is it really 3.3%, or has it been missed, or were they kind of self-medicating with some other reason? So anyway, again, I left my diatribe. Let's go to a break and kind of come back. Everybody, to learn more, go to Linda's website at addiva.net, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function challenge make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more, or call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE to get your free college success guide.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to ADDCA.com and click on Find a Coach.
Managing ADHD is about pausing before you ponder and proceed. This opportunity to practice pausing is being brought to you by DigCoaching.com. The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back. We're here with Linda Rogley. We're very grateful for her coming on the show tonight and talking about ADHD later in life. And before the break, we were covering some baseline information and talking about the lack of stuff that's out there. And Linda has got some great points. So, Linda, what's the next in our progression? What makes the most sense to cover next?
Well, to be honest with you, when I was looking at ADHD and aging, I had to find out, well, what's normal aging? So I did lots and lots of research, and fortunately there are lots of places out there that you can get information about aging, and especially we're talking about cognitive aging, so what's happening with our brains and how we're using them and how we're able to be effective with them. So there's, number one, there's some good news about regular cognitive aging, regular old, everybody does it, and including ADHD folks. The good news is that our language skills actually improve as we get older, up to about age 70, and then everything falls apart. No, I'm just teasing. It doesn't just fall apart. But at least to age 70, language skills are improving. Our crystallized intelligence, which is what we talk about when we have a fact and then we build on a fact and then we get another fact and another fact. So that is pretty stable as well. The neat thing is that facial recognition remains constant. That's really steady. Now, name recognition is a whole different thing. That is something that's very difficult as we get older, and it gets more and more difficult. But we recognize faces, not a problem at all. But remember that our human brains are still back in caveman days, so we weren't really programmed. Our brains weren't really programmed to be able to think fast after we were age 40 or 50. And so our information age is kind of sped past our brain's ability to catch up with it after we get to a certain age. Now, so the downside of normal aging is that, as I mentioned before, we do have some slower processing speed in our brains. And that doesn't start when you're over 50. That starts when you're over 30. And I know 30-year-olds may not want to hear that. But also executive function begins to decline as well. Working memory begins to decline. Selective memories, which is what we use when we're driving, like we're looking at this and then we're looking at that. More driving accidents as you get older. Episodic memory declines, and that's interesting because that's your own autobiographical events. So some of the things that happened in your life, you may begin to kind of get a little vague about. We have trouble with spatial and visual things, more trouble. We have more trouble inhibiting our responses. If this is beginning to sound familiar, I just want to make sure that you understand this is paralleling a lot of the things that we deal with ADHD.
Yep.
And we have more and more trouble as we get older with multitasking, for instance. We have, and this is true for ADHD folks, but it's certainly more true for older folks, we have fewer, the synapses, that little connection where the neurons are jumping, where the neurotransmitters are jumping across the little synapse to help us make good connections in our electrical system, if you will, up in our brain.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, we have fewer connections. There's the dendrites, the little wavy things at the end of the neurons get a little shorter. There's fewer little, I call them, mitts, catcher's mitts, to capture that stuff, especially the excitatory neurotransmitters, and dopamine is one of those. And dopamine has a prominent role in ADHD. So if you look at all of the things that aging brings us, it also, as I mentioned, parallels many of the things that we with ADHD have trouble with all of our entire lives, which is why I'm saying this is more like a layered effect. So as we get older, it seems to me that everybody has this fear. And I know that I've woken up in the middle of the night kind of like, oh, my gosh, is it dementia? And what researchers tell us is that everybody's brain slows down and keeps slowing down so that if you have a completely normal brain with no other issues, you don't have Alzheimer's, nothing else, if you live to be 130 years old, your synapse efficiency, all that little jumping space I was talking about a minute ago, decreases to the point that you would have the cognitive function of somebody who has Alzheimer's and without any of the biological symptoms. So the truth is that, I hate to say it, but our brains are on decline just as our bodies begin to show signs of, you know, less body, less muscle tone, some things like that. And I don't want to paint this picture as completely negative, because as I said, there are things that we can do, as you know, whether we're young or whether we're old, and some of those things work across the board and some of them don't. Because remember, if we're already 50 and we don't know we have ADHD, we've already developed a lot of coping strategies. So we'll talk about some of those in just a couple minutes. So I'm going to take a breath and let you say something.
I want to just pause here for a second. See if I can do this with really quickly. Your brain is a low voltage electrical system, and you have billions of neurons. They get excited, they fire electrical charge, and a wave of electricity goes down a neuron. Think of it like a stick out your index finger. It's like this long, thin thing. When it gets to the end, it's got to get from one neuron to the next, and there's a gap between the two. In order for it to jump that gap, think of it like this: neurotransmitters are sprayed into that gap, kind of like hairspray, and then they're kind of sucked back in on the, I forget the word that you use, the dendrites or stuff on the other side. And that mechanism is really kind of key, particularly with dopamine, because it's that neurotransmitter is sprayed. It's the reward neurotransmitter. It's basically, think of it like this, is an orgasm is just a sprain of dopamine. It's the reward. The brain likes that. And there's more dopamine in that gap, the more you pay attention to it. And what I think Linda's talking about is that degrades over a period of time, the receptors and the sprain on that side. And so it's less receptive. And that's the mechanical side of the brain that begins to have some difficulties, which leads to focus, attention, and all kinds of other things. So Linda, did I misrepresent that? Your perspective?
Thank you for explaining it to everyone, because I was making assumptions, and I appreciate you backing up a little bit so that we can put some feet under that, because in order to understand what's going on in your brain, you kind of have to understand it at a tiny, teeny, microscopic level. And to tell you the truth, it's not so important that we know that information. We can trust our doctors to help us, you know, take the medication that helps improve those connections, et cetera, et cetera. Exercise, there are lots of things that will help improve those connections. And it seems to me, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but when I get older, it just seems like there's more to do to maintain this, you know, my state of well-being. You know, it's just patch, patch, patch all the time, doggone it. That's true because our bodies and our brains are having some decline, so we have to kind of give them even more support, which is a great way to put it, because we want to be around. You know, this is a pretty good life to be in. Pretty good life to be in. I wanted to say just two things that are completely out of context, but you mentioned them earlier.
Yep.
You said something about the nicotine and the smoking cessation, and that makes perfect sense, because nicotine certainly does bring you to alertness. You know, that certainly has an impact. But I just got an interesting email from somebody who is now manufacturing not nicotine but caffeine breath mints, which is another way of self-medication. And I thought, you have to be kidding. And they want to send me a free sample. I said, okay, go right ahead and send me a free sample of caffeine breath mints. I just thought it was pretty hilarious, to tell you the truth. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that in because I think it's pretty interesting. So now we know a little bit about our brain chemistry, and as people age, some of us, fall into a category called mild cognitive impairment. So this is when we kind of veer off of normal aging into something that is less than normal. And mild cognitive impairment You may forget things more, and it's hard when mild cognitive impairment kind of moves into your brain, takes over a little bit. It's kind of hard to tell the difference between it's, whether it's a senior moment or whether it's really, they call it MCI for short. So let me just, if you can bear with me, I'll just call it MCI since it's a long word to say. For someone to diagnose this, a doctor to diagnose MCI, mild cognitive impairment, you have to have a decline in at least two of these areas. And these are also going to sound like ADHD issues. One of them is executive functioning. Remember I said that was that's something that declines anyway. Memory starts to decline. And we all, I've certainly had those times when it's like, oh, what was that name? Or what was I trying to remember? Attention tends to decline as well, which certainly is true for ADHD.
Yep.
Language skills decline. That's not necessarily something that you see with ADHD. And also visual spatial skills also decline. Sometimes that's true of ADHD, sometimes it's not. Here's the good news and the bad news. MCI, mild cognitive impairment, is a precursor. It can precede Alzheimer's disease. It lives in the same part of the brain. It kind of has the same geography of the brain as Alzheimer's. So you can draw a direct connection between mild cognitive impairment to Alzheimer's and Alzheimer's, which is a form of dementia. The good news is that there is no direct line between mild cognitive impairment and ADHD or vice versa. So if you have ADHD, it doesn't mean you're going to develop MCI. It doesn't mean you're not, because there are other factors in there. So there is no known correlation between ADHD and mild cognitive impairment. So I think that's really good news, even though they sound very similar. Because then I think that's why people get a little freaked, because they are kind of, oh my gosh, I'm not remembering things. I don't know what to do. You know, it gets worse and worse, and it gets worse for everybody as you get older. So what is it? Is it ADD, or my famous line, is it ADD or is it AGE?
AGE,
ADD. So, and it's hard to sort out. It's even hard to sort out for doctors, but I'm heartened to hear that more and more people are being diagnosed with ADHD. Remember, ADHD is about longevity of symptoms. Mild cognitive impairment is going to develop as you get older. So you look back on your childhood, as I mentioned earlier in this broadcast, you look back on the things that were going on. Were you always late to class? Did you more times than not have to stay up all night to finish your assignments when college or high school? Did you get fired from jobs? Did you have trouble with relationships because you weren't paying attention, even in intimate moments? So it's a lifelong pattern rather than a, oh, my gosh, now that I'm 50 or 40 or 50 or 60, I just can't remember anything. That's not ADHD.
Yeah. So I'm sitting here. I'm grateful, so grateful that you're talking about this. And I want to bring up, when you're dealing with a physician that's trying to diagnose what's going on, a lot of this is symptomatic. There's not necessarily direct tests that they can do it. And Linda, as you described this, let me digress for a second. I did a show with you, I think, 4 years. It was very impactful. I think it was the second or first show I had ever did with you. You said, is it ADD, AGE, or menopause? And you talked about the trifecta. There's like a lot of high-functioning women out there that are kind of cruising along. They hit their late 40s. Age starts to kind of kick in, and so some of this stuff starts to happen. And then you go through premenopausal, and estrogens drop, and all of a sudden you get this diagnosis of ADHD. And they were high-functioning before, and all this stuff kind of comes together. And I don't mean for – it's not a very good term, but the house of cards kind of falls in. And that's not really fair. I don't mean it kind of like that. But it kind of comes together, and I can see how somebody could go through that, and later they're doing this, and they're showing up in the doctor, and they could easily be fall into the MCI group that you're kind of talking about. When it was really ADHD, they had just developed a lot of coping or compensatory strategies that dealt with it that the rest of the world was kind of oblivious to. And it's very concerning, that type of thing, and be misdiagnosed, if you will, when you really have ADHD, but you've got that. And it's crazy. And the more I've talked to physicians that are diagnosing this area, it's pretty difficult to discern the differences here. It's really, really kind of challenging. And I think that's why I think it's it was an act of kindness to the rest of the world that you got selfishness or making that distinction so that people can do the research to help the doctors. Because at the end of the day, if you're a physician, you haven't diagnosed all kinds of stuff. And the distinction between this and ADHD and bipolar and OCD, and it just gets overwhelming because it's symptomatic. Yes. So
The other thing that you're talking about, excuse me for interrupting you, but the other thing that's important to remember here is that many, and I have to tell you that my friend Dr. Bill Dodson says this often, is that physicians diagnose what they know, and even though most physicians and psychiatrists believe that they know something about ADHD, few of them know much about it, either in adults and certainly not older adults, but they often don't recognize it as ADHD. They may see it as a depression, or they may see it, as you mentioned, bipolar, or some of the other things that happen in later life, or they may even misdiagnose it as dementia, although dementia has a different, if you excuse this kind of connection here, it has a different dimension to it. The issues are much more severe. And while we're on there, I know you probably need to take a break here in another minute or two, but I do want to mention one thing that you teased in one of your social media the only thing I think of is blurt, so I'm just going to say blurt because I'm being a blurting. I'm blurting right now, so I'm just going to say that. But in one of your social media tweets out there, you said something about that there is some bad news. And I have to tell you that the studies that have been done are few, and they are what are called retrospective studies. So that's when they ask people who have an illness to look back and see, well, what happened when you were younger? Or they will ask, in this case, they ask people who are close to them. And the way they did this particular study was to ask people who had a form of dementia called dementia with Lewy bodies. And that's L-E-W-Y, bodies, as in your body, but it's plural. So dementia with Lewy bodies, they shorten it to D-L-B. Yep. And there is, in this anecdotal and retrospective study, some evidence that there is a line between ADHD and dementia with Lewy bodies. The control group had about 15% dementia with Lewy bodies. The Alzheimer's group only had 15% of connection with dementia with Lewy bodies, and the ADHD group was 48% connection.
Wow.
So the correlation was much higher there. And and you guys may not know exactly, you may not have heard of dementia with Lewy bodies, but I bet you've heard of Robin Williams. And he had dementia with Lewy bodies. And my guess is, and I have no idea whether this is true, but I'm just positing, that he also had ADHD. He was, you know, if you'd seen him younger as Mork and Mindy, I mean, he was just like off the wall kind of thing. And that's not necessarily the accurate description of ADHD. But unfortunately, that is what he had when he died. And it's under the umbrella of, it kind of touches Parkinson's disease. And the connection between all three of these things is dopamine. And I'm glad you mentioned dopamine earlier, because that's that reward, that's that kind of, that's why people jump out of airplanes to get their dopamine going again. And the highest risk age group for dementia with Lewy bodies is age 50 to 85, which is exactly the age group that we're talking about. And you don't really see this memory impairment early in the disease. You see it more and more later, and that's true for Alzheimer's issues as well. As you get older, the Alzheimer's issues get worse. But dementia with Lewy bodies is very different. And I don't mean to scare people, because these studies are preliminary and some people think they're controversial. One of the preliminary symptoms of dementia with Lewy bodies is REM sleep is disrupted. REM is rapid eye movement, and that's when we're dreaming. And that's we need all three kinds of sleep, the deep sleep, the light sleep, and the REM sleep, and that's actually one of the really important restorative sleeps. So lots of information out there, and I won't go into all the technical stuff, but I just want to urge people to not take this information and say, oh, my gosh, I've got it. You can't self-diagnose on this, any of it.
Yeah.
You need to see a competent physician who really knows all of these issues. And right now there is no, at least as far as we know, there is no direct hereditary link for dementia with Lewy bodies. There is for ADHD. So in that respect, only by association there might be a link. But I just want to let people know that there is a tiny bit of potential bad news, but nothing to lose sleep over right now.
Well, there's if you're listening to this, I would encourage you to backwind this about 20 minutes and listen to Linda. Was a plethora of some amazing stuff. And it's hard for me to pull it. There's two things that I do want to touch base before we go to break. And number one is doctors do diagnose what they know. What's obvious is what you pay attention to. You're trained in a certain way. You look through those kind of lenses. And finding a competent doctor and the elderly that knows this stuff, it's not necessarily an easy thing. The other comment that I wanted to make is that Linda is talking about a lot of things. And like anything, when they start doing research, they always begin to focus on the negative first. And that's the first things that they kind of go after for a variety of reasons. Number one, there's some urgency to it. It's a problem. Number two, it's what people read and kind of publish. And I do think that, as she had said earlier, they're cobbling together a lot of research, I think, is actually what she said, and which is kind of profound to me because I actually have interviewed some people in some other areas where there's no direct research. They're using other stuff that was studying other stuff and trying to take bits and pieces of this. And so there's a correlation, but we're still trying to figure it out, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to have Linda on this, is to actually get a discussion going on this, because the more people that are expressing interest, it impacts the stuff. So with that, I want to go to a break, but you've clearly witnessed the brilliance of Linda Rogley, which means you actually have to learn more and go to her website at addiva.net. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You can't go off to college with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential. You can also call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE and get a free college success guide.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to Attention Talk Radio. We're having a great conversation, and quite frankly, I have to tell you, I'm a little embarrassed out there. Is, you know, every once in a while, I bring a guest on, and I think, hey, I got something here. And all of a sudden, I realize there's got to be a sequel to this, because we can't cover nearly everything that's there. And I'm grateful for Linda to come on and put a spotlight on this. And everybody, we're not going to. So, Linda, I'll be in contact about doing some type of a sequel.
Okay. That's fine.
But we're laying this stuff out. And one of the things that I'm getting from this conversation is – is you have ADHD, and a lot of these things that are there, and aging, the aging process kind of leverages that stuff in a negative way. And I think it's, as I'm sitting there thinking about myself, because I'm starting to feel the effects of aging and I'm starting to worry about some of this type of stuff. And I got to pause and say, hey, just because I'm in this situation and I'm cognitive impaired doesn't mean gloom or doom. I actually have to stop and think about what's going on. And realizes that, hey, I'm aging. I've got to adapt to it. That's number one. Number two is I know that there's a few things that I can do to kind of help the situation. And near and dear to my heart is I've done some interviews with Dr. John Rady, and I'm big on exercising. And exercise actually is probably the single greatest thing that you can do for ADHD, and the best thing that you can do, not to reverse aging, but actually to slow it down. In your research, is that consistent with what you've heard and seen, or have you heard or read different stuff?
Oh, gosh, of course I haven't read different stuff. I mean, it's kind of annoying to me because everything I read about exercise, oh, it helps this, it helps this. It's kind of the cure-all for everything. And I know that there are some folks out there who say, well, I can't really do exercise. But, you know, I actually bought my mom a DVD, and instead of, she doesn't use downloads and all that kind of stuff, but it's actually exercises that you can do in your chair. So there's even chair exercises and chair yoga. So there's really
yep.
no excuse for, even if you can't move your legs, if you're having some mobility issues, there are ways that you can get exercise, and you need to get your heart rate up to do that. That's what's important with this. I know some people say, oh, just taking a walk two or three times will be fine. Well, that's great, but if you're just kind of, to use a word my mother used to use when I was a kid, lollygagging around. I mean, if it's just kind of like, oh, I think I'll look at the birds. You need to be out there walking and not just be, you know, with my dog sniffing every single thing
yep.
that comes around. So if I'm going to exercise, I leave my dogs at home. They get their exercise
yep,
somewhere
yep.
else. And absolutely, exercise is the prime piece of this. And it's the prime piece even if you don't have ADHD, frankly, because it improves those synapses, and actually I really think that it improves what they now call brain plasticity, which is the
yes.
ability of the brain to kind of heal itself, if you will. It's not exactly that,
yep.
but it's kind of close to that. So it also improves memory, and one of the things that I wanted to talk about tonight was memory, because that's when people start to begin to think that they have dementia, when they
yep.
can't remember things. And a lot of folks without ADHD, a lot of folks who are getting older will go to the doctor and say, Doc, I think I've got dementia. I think it's early onset Alzheimer's, or maybe it's just late onset Alzheimer's. And often the doctor will do the tests. And do you know who the president of the United States is? Do you know what day of the week it is? Do you know,
yep.
you know, that kind of stuff? The basic questions, because
yep.
a lot of folks with Alzheimer's cannot give you that, depending on
yep.
the stage of their Alzheimer's condition. And what often happens is that the doctor will send them home and say, you have a lot going on and your brain isn't processing it as quickly. Allow yourself to simply take a breath and let your brain catch up with you. And it's frustrating for those of us who've been thinking so fast our whole lives, and we just can't get it, we can't get it, we can't get it. It's hard for us to say, okay, I'm just going to take a breath, and usually it will come back to you. And you know what? If it doesn't come back to you, it's not the end of the world. I think that having one of my key phrases is speak the obvious. So if you're in a conversation with someone it's a very important conversation, and suddenly you've forgotten their name, or you've lost your place in line where what you were talking about next, which is typical of ADHD as well. If you're able to say, whoa, I just went off for a minute. So what were we talking about? And if you don't make a big deal about it, they're not going to make a big deal about it. So knowing that memory is a big issue for a lot of folks, I just want to talk about that just a little bit, just talk about kind of some basics about memory. Memory is not like a file cabinet. We used to think, okay, we're just going to whiz through these numbers, and we're going to go through those files, and we're going to pull out the right one. Oh, there's the name, that kind of thing. But that's
yep.
not the case. Dr. Tom Brown talks about memories and emotions being stored all in different parts of our brain. So when we go back to access those memories, you're going to different parts of your brain. And just very quickly, I'm going to talk about this. Again, we can talk about it more at length later, but in a different show, perhaps.
Yep.
But the way memories are stored in our brain is kind of the way we're able to retrieve them. So, for instance, if you see a piece of peach pie, it may trigger a memory, or maybe if you smell a peach, you know, baking in the oven, it's going to trigger those memories of, oh, I know what a fresh peach smells like. I remember picking peaches when I was a kid. My grandmother used to make fresh peach pie. It was her specialty. And all those pieces are coming from different parts of your brain. They're coming from visual. They're
yep.
coming from hearing, all those different pieces to put that memory together for you. And what happens with that memory is that with emotion attached to it, it is much more clear. That's why
yes.
most people remember where they were when they heard about 9/11. I mean, that's kind of a universal thing in today's era.
Yep.
People
yep.
remember where they heard about it, what was said, so forth and so on. But here's the interesting thing. Memories aren't quite as dependable as we think they are, regardless of whether you have dementia or whether you do not have dementia. Now, dementia is, again, a different dimension of it. But there was an experiment that was done after 9/11, and they interviewed people immediately afterwards, the next day or two after it. And they had the people, the researchers, ask them to describe what had happened, so forth and so on. They had a set of questions. 6 weeks later, they went back to the same people. They asked them exactly the same questions. The people were sure that they remembered it perfectly because this is a huge emotional attachment.
Yep, yep.
They're a hook in it.
Yep.
The memories had changed. The memories were not the same.
Yep.
Now, some of them were, but some memories had altered, even though the people believed that they were exactly correct about that. So that's what you need to know about memory, is that memory isn't quite as dependable as you think it is. It's not a video recording. It's not always accurate. It's not uniform. It doesn't mean that you're stupid if you can't remember something. It has nothing to do with intelligence. And it also changes with age, as we've just talked about a little bit. But what's important to know is that your memories, let me just say this before we go on. Even the act of retrieving memories can alter them. Isn't that disgusting? That just makes me so mad.
Yep, yep.
So, but the more that you remember something, the more accurately you're going to remember it, even though I just said that, it practice makes perfect kind of thing. And the other piece is, and this has important implications for getting older with whether you have ADHD or not, to remember something, you have to have some kind of a hook to send it into your brain. So the way you get it in is the way you get it out again. So if you are able, that's why there's a wonderful book called Moonwalking with Einstein, and it's a guy who was just an ordinary guy, and he learned how to be a memory champion. Do you believe they have Olympics of memory? Isn't that just silly?
Yep.
But they do. And the way he suggested, and please take a look at the book, it's a very interesting book, is that he builds a palace, and as he goes into that palace, he puts things on the palace fence, or he puts them on the table, or he puts them there, and then when he wants to retrieve them, he goes back through that, quote, palace, and you can make it a house, you can make it a cabin, and that's how he retrieves those memories. So there are tricks that we can use, even if our memories aren't as good as they used to be, ADD or not, we can use those kind of memory tricks, you know, associating something. You know, if you meet somebody named John Bull, you think of a bull stomping his feet and that kind of stuff, and an outdoor John, right? Then you kind of get that.
Yep.
Please don't call him outhouse John, a bull. I mean, that would be good, but you understand where I'm going with this.
Yes. Yeah.
Is kind of weird, and yet it is really important. So just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, so I was fascinated what you described. So what I heard is it's almost like you've heard about like artists laying down tracks. Well, they'll record like the guitar, and then a guy will record, like I think Steely Dan, if I'm not mistaken. There's two guys, they played it, like they would record like the drum thing, and then they would record, like they would listen to it and do the guitar and the bass guitar and all that kind of stuff. And then like a motion picture is, memory is kind of like, it's got these different pieces of it that are stored all over it. And the memory is actually assembled by these different places. And if there's an issue with one of those areas, when it assembles, it's a little bit different. Almost like the internet, when you send something out, it gets split up and goes all over the place and reassembled on the other side. And memory is not just a recall or association, it's assembly process, which is interesting. And if you're very mindful and you begin to think about how you remember things, I think there's a lot that can be done with the tricks. I think it's complex. Although, at the same time, I also want to tell this story. Is I was in a parade one time in Tampa. We have our version of Mardi Gras. It's called Gasparilla. And I was with a bunch of Cub Scouts, and we were doing this thing, and we throw beads and all this kind of stuff. And I'm walking with my neighbor, who's an OBGYN, and everybody's yelling, "Hey, Dr. So-and-so, hey, Doc." And he's like, "Hi, hi." And I began to look over at him like, "You don't have a clue who these people are." And he looks at me and goes, "Nope." He says, "When you deliver their baby, they know who you are, but it's just another nameless, faceless person in the crowd." And the fascinating thing about me, as I studied him after that, I'm reflecting back to articulate it, because it was amazing, because he had a way of managing that. He knew, number one, he's not going to remember them, but he had a way of dealing with them where everybody felt like they were important. And there are strategies that you can kind of do with some of this stuff if you're cognitive and don't beat yourself up in a negative way and just say, "Listen, this is what I got to deal with," and figure out a way to do it. And that goes back to what you had said earlier, and I really want to emphasize this, is wait a second, I missed something here. Where were we? Something like that is simple, and a lot of people judge themselves for it, but I see it happen every day. And if you do it in a nonchalant way, it can many times be managed, and you can get yourself back to square one when you lose track of a conversation in a very nondiscreet way. And again, I really want to emphasize that is if you do it the right way, people don't even notice, which is the way to manage it. So I said all that, and I want to give you the opportunity to comment, to make any changes or just thoughts.
No, I absolutely agree. And I'm cognizant of time, and I really want to talk about hormones for just a minute. Can I change the subject quickly?
Yeah, please do that, because we do. Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so we talked about this several years ago. So if people want to know more about the hormones and menopause and so forth and so on, they can go back and listen to that other one. But so just suffice it for this conversation to say that estrogen has a huge impact on women's brains. It may have an impact on men's brains too, but we haven't studied that as much as we have with women. And of course, women's estrogen goes up and down with periods, and then of course goes kind of crazy at menopause, and then eventually kind of drops down to levels that are below, you know, what we had before we even started our periods. And so when I think I've said this before, but when I was diagnosed, I kind of said, oh, so what, until I hit menopause, and then I ran back to the psychiatrist and said, I need my ADHD medications. And instead of giving them to me, he said, ADHD women's brains need estrogen. Go get some. And I said, can't you just give me some? And he wouldn't do it. So anyway, that's a whole other story. But I had to really be careful, because the Women's Health Initiative had just come out. There was all this bad press about taking estrogen replacement, so forth and so on. And you know, that information you're going to find in that other thing. So my personal story is that I decided I would do it, and I just want to say just real quickly, estrogen-only replacement for ADHD brains is better than the combination of estrogen and progesterone, because progesterone can cause foggy brain. But you need to absolutely talk to your doctor about this. There are compounded formulas that you can use that are creams. I use a patch. So that's something that you need to talk about, because if you have I need to say this part. If you are taking estrogen in any form without progesterone and you still have a uterus, you have to have yourself with an ultrasound or some kind of testing to make sure that that you don't have that cancer hasn't crept into your diagnosis here. So that's just really important. But all the rest of the stuff is about your history and your estrogen sensitivity, et cetera, et cetera. But I want to talk about men as well, because I don't often talk about testosterone. Yep. And testosterone goes down as well. It declines as well as we get older. And what does that do for men? It kind of makes them irritable, to tell you the truth. They have more mood swings. It does affect their brain. Their cognitive function does decline because of testosterone. Their sleep quality it interferes with sleep when you get older. And so but keep in mind there's a big difference in the testosterone decline and the estrogen decline, in that the estrogen decline is steep and quick. When you stop having your periods, that estrogen's going away. With testosterone, it's more gradual, so men may or may not notice it quite as much until one day they wake up and are running to the doctor saying, wait a minute, something's wrong. Something's wrong. But there is testosterone replacement too. And there are some side effects. One of them is acne. One of them is breast enlargement, and one of them is sleep apnea. So even trying to help your sleep by using testosterone can actually create sleep problems. It also can increase the risk of stroke. It also can cause blood clots in some people. And here's the important piece, is that a lot of guys think, I'm going to take testosterone because they have some issues with sexual performance as they get older, ED, erectile dysfunction. Yep. And here's the important part to know, is that testosterone doesn't even touch it. It has nothing to do with it. That's more about blood flow than it is about hormones. So just want to mention that if you're going to run out there and, oh, I think I need testosterone because I want to have a better sex life, that's not necessarily going to happen. You might feel better. You might feel, but that's not about function. So I just wanted to get some hormone stuff in here before we end tonight, because I know it's important to folks. And for me, it made a huge difference. So I also wanted to mention one more thing, and that is that of the people over age 45 who are diagnosed with ADHD, fewer than half of them have ever sought any kind of treatment at all. No treatment, no medication, nothing, not coaching, not therapy, nothing.
Yep.
They get diagnosed, that's it. They do nothing about it. Oh, well, that's nice to know. Only 25 of the people who have been diagnosed, keep in mind that's half of that half, have ever tried medication. And medication helps 70% of the people, but but I always hear, oh, but I can't take that because I have heart problems.
Yep.
Dr. Bill Dodson swears that anybody can take stimulants, and I'm just talking about stimulants here, as long as you monitor blood pressure. It's not the high number, it's the low number of your blood pressure. If it goes up a little bit, decrease the dose. And he has information about that with some of the things, actually, on the ADHD Palooza, as a matter of fact, ADHDpalooza.com. And the other thing that if you are taking any kind of stimulant, you have to stay away from citric acid before and after, you know, within about an hour and a half range before and after, unless you take some kind of like a Tums or something like that. And keep in mind that citric acid is not just in your orange juice in the morning. Citric acid is in blueberries. It's in it's in multivitamins. It's in broccoli. It's in peas. It's in kale, the health food, right? It's in breakfast bars. It's in papayas. And for heaven's sake, if you're taking something like I often do when I get a cold, I will take one of the over-the-counter fizzy things that has lots of extra vitamin C in it. That's
yep.
something that's going to interfere with the effectiveness of if you're taking a stimulant. So there certainly are some caveats out there, and I'm kind of running through them quickly here because I know we're running out of time, but I just want people to know that there are things that they can do and there are things that they should not do, which is one of them is vitamin C if you're taking medication, if you're one of that lucky 25% that have tried medication and it works for you. That's the
wow.
end of it. I'm not going to say any
more. Wow.
I
so
really
missed this one. Linda, I so screwed this up. I should have from the get-go. We should have been like a 2 or 3 part series, and everybody will be working on it. But my takeaway tonight is very much is that as you get older, ADHD is just not for kids. It goes through the lifespan. I personally, this is my own personal feeling, is that there's far more older people that actually have this, but they've been self-medicating in one way, shape, or form. And life – actually, you and I did a show – a couple of years ago, pontificating about how society has changed and more people getting diagnosed as a result of the need to do more things, which taxes the ADHD brain. And at the end of the day, I don't think this necessarily is bad news, because actually knowing this and learning about this and being aware of it and little things like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have my orange juice in the morning when I'm taking my medication. Oh, maybe you should do a little bit of exercise. Hey, maybe this isn't leading to Alzheimer's because I got this. That type of awareness puts you in power actually to be able to manage things. And at the end of the day, ADHD is really about understanding how it works and being able to manage it and make it happen. And so it all goes back to a little selfish act that Linda did to kind of to deal with her situation. And it's a plethora of information. And I'm grateful that you did that and that you were able to come on the show tonight. So with that, everybody, stay tuned because we will likely have a sequel. And Linda, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Everybody, we hope you've enjoyed this. Learn more about Linda. Clearly, you need to study up on it. It's addiva.net. That's addiva.net. And she referenced Women's Palooza. That's womenpalooza, P-A-L-O-O-Z-A.com. With that, catch us next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.